Welcome, IT Changemakers, to The Dex Show with Tim Flower and Tom McGraw. Let's get into it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Reality Bites Poetry Slam. I'd like to begin by inviting Megan Brake to the stage. Megan's going to read us a poem about Reality Bites written by a poet called ChatGPT. Do I have that right, Megan?
Oh, yeah, that's the venerated poet who customized this piece of art for me.
We're all looking forward to hearing it, Megan. Thank you.
All right, a poetry reading by ChatGPT. Reality Bites, a podcast that's smart, hosted by Tom and Tim, with contributions from Sam, Dina, Oriana, Catherine, and Megan. Their insights and discussions are truly an art. They keep us up to date on the latest in tech. From cloud computing to AI, they cover it all with expertise and ease. Their voices are a symphony guiding us through the digital seas. Tune in every week for a dose of tech savviness. With Reality Bites, you'll stay ahead of the game, no guess, so don't miss a single episode of this IT Trends podcast that's truly dope.
Thank you, Megan. That was very beautiful. I first saw that in the chat, I was like, it's just a load of sentences. I didn't even realize it rhymed until I reread it. So I've gone from feeling human and superior about this.
Yeah,
technology.
The bit about the digital seas, I was like, that's actually an impressive verse. Like, just yeah, one in there
bad,
that was actually.
Bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Megan, the question I had is, what did you ask it to say? What did you put into
generate? It was actually pretty simple. I think I told it, could you please write me a poem about my IT Trends podcast, Reality Bites? And then I gave it the list of all our names. And this was actually the second poem. The first time, I just put all our names in one block, and it did the same thing it did with this one. It just put them all in one line. And so then I specified hosts, Tom and Tim, and contributors, and then I put the rest of our names. And it still stuck them all in one line. Mm. So I just, I let that stand. That was a creative choice by GPT.
Got it. Yeah. Don't interfere. I mean, I feel like the enthusiasm with which content creators are showing with this tool is the definition of digging our own grave. But here we are, all the same. I believe Sam has also been playing around with it and busy digging his grave too, as we are over here.
Yes, that's right. This generative AI, I guess, is how you categorize this type of AI. I've stayed away for the most part from the writing based AI tools as a writer myself. I am silently protesting such activities, right. But I appreciate the poem nonetheless.
And you were trying to keep a distance at least, Sam. I'm glad to hear it. We obviously, there's a few content creators on the call, and I think we should all be quaking in our boots a little at this shot across the bows from AI into our previously pretty safe, professions. But thinking now about IT, which is what this is all about a bit more, interested, Dina, to get your take. I understand you've already kind of integrated ChatGPT specifically into your workflows at the moment. Is that right?
Yes, we've been trying to look into better ways to enhance how we do our scripts. How can we, just from a testing perspective, how can we write workflows and improve the overall documentation of our descriptions, etc.? Mm-hmm. So it is very impressive how accurate and time-saving it could get. So you'd still need the human review a little bit on top of it, but it generally comes back with the smart suggestions.
Excellent. So, Oriana, interested to know where you feel this leaves the sort of profession that NextThink serves, not just ChatGPT, but, AI more generally, and how this is redefining the whole notion of expertise and what it means to be an expert with regards to the growing sophistication of the tools that we employ, I suppose.
So jumping off of actually our last conversation on this topic, I mentioned this idea that Dean is also talking about of it needs human supervision, right? Like you can generate really good content, but you can also generate very authoritative bad content. So it's really important to have somebody who has the expertise to evaluate that effectively. I think one of the risks that I see is the devaluation of expertise. Specifically, when you have something that allows you to work smarter, not harder, it can be very easy to forget that that smarter part is actually really critically important, right? So I really want somebody like Dina looking at this content, evaluating it, figuring out what is and isn't relevant and accurate and appropriate, especially, right? That's a really important component, especially when it comes to anything that affects human beings. You know, our systems are only as good as we make them, but it's really easy to come to rely on them because we give them this sort of illusion of authority, right? We're really used to trusting technology, and it feels very authoritative. As a social psychologist, this is something, you know, one of the first things you learn in social psychology, sort of the danger of how much authority can bias our own views. So, for example, if a company decides, okay, we have all these tools, we don't really need that many people, and they get rid of some of this expertise, right? Like if you have a junior person who you can pay a third of the price of a person who has Dina's expertise, and you put them in charge of just generating a bunch of scripts, and then you have a bunch of bad scripts, well, then you have a convenient scapegoat, right? You can fire the intern and say, well, you did a bad job. Instead of saying, well, we've now disinvested from training up people who have critical thinking and experience and really good discernment that comes from both of those things, right? Knowledge and experience.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Joe, it reminds me a bit of the way, as I understand it, I'm not a pilot in any way, shape or form. But the way I understand pilots often work, right? They have autopilot. They have a lot of automated skills that are very, very useful, make landing the plane easier. But at the end of the day, should that fail you, you don't want a pilot who doesn't really know their stuff sat in the cockpit going, oh dear, we seem to be a bit of a predicament. So it's kind of interesting, the concept of like tacit, the importance of tacit expertise in all of the different professions that are impacted by AI, perhaps.
Yeah, I think bouncing off of that last night when I was playing around with ChatGPT and seeing, you know, what could I get it to do? And coming from the perspective of a writer, right? There's this sort of looming threat of like, will AI displace every copywriter? But I think Oriana makes a great point that sure, ChatGPT, I asked it to write a couple paragraphs to see if it could write this ebook that I'm working on for Next Think, just kind of as a joke. But it produced three paragraphs that were informative and authoritative and factual. And I thought, you know, that's okay. But then I read it more closely with the knowledge and expertise I have from having worked in marketing for over 10 years. And, you know, there were a couple statements it made that I would want to fact check. And there were a couple sentences that you don't really need for the kind of asset I was writing. So, you know, yeah, maybe this could displace a first year copywriter who's just trying to, you know, build up their portfolio. But it doesn't displace the knowledge that you gain from experience, from working in these kind of fields. And I even asked it, you know, can you write a synopsis for a fantasy story? And what it produced was, not very creative, shall we say. I think that idea that Oriana presents of, you know, we could come to think, oh, well, we don't need, you know, the human worker anymore. We have this machine that can do it for us. Well, you still do need the human lens to say, to qualify the end product.
I was just going to say, going off that, what Megan's example that she came up with, the first time that I really encountered this tool, I had a friend who works in marketing content, relatively similar to the type of content we do at Next Think, you know, like business thought leadership. And she used a similar tool. I'm not sure if it was this exact one, but basically as the equivalent of the sloppy first draft, you know, the hardest thing in writing is staring at the blank page. And so she would basically, you know, plug in the details for an article in and would get, you know, the first draft, and it would be a bit clunky, but it would seem like it was written by, you know, a human, and then you can use that to go off of. So I think that is actually an effective use that obviously you know, you're walking a tightrope of kind of originality and authenticity from a content perspective. But I think for the writing tools, I think that is, you know, an effective use for it that, you know, I don't see too many problems with. I think the ethical concerns come down more to, I don't know if any of you have seen some of the visual art that can be generated from some of these tools. The first time I, our videographer, Justin, actually showed me the DALL-E tool that is very popular right now. And I believe, you know, we plugged in just a series of random words. I believe we created some type of, I think we typed in a sad wolf on the moon in the style of, you can even say what style of artwork you want to replicate. You can say
quite abstract. A creative proposal, Sam, to be fair.
Yeah. And right, but within 30 seconds to a minute, this tool churns out 5 or 6 unique paintings, basically, that are exactly what we asked for. And that is where it gets a little eerie in sci-fi, because there, in theory, there's nothing stopping us from posting that on our Instagram page and saying, hey, I've been trying my hand at visual artwork during the as a hobby I picked up during the pandemic, and look what I look what I can do now. So I think there are some strange ethical quandaries that are starting to come up that you've seen a lot of people raise over the past couple months. I know there was a big trending topic on Twitter about a month ago, because this new tool came out where you could basically input 5 or 6 pictures of yourself, and it would churn out these very well done self portraits in different, you know, weird costumes and environments and stuff. But they would be so authentic looking, and it raised a lot of concerns about both sharing of data and also just kind of the devaluation of artwork itself. So I think that it's something that I think we're going to see over the next couple of years as this becomes more of a thing. You know, the question of whether there needs to be some type of checks and balances in place, what kind of responsibility do companies have, and do people have to kind of handle this very science fiction seeming capability of some of these tools in a way that kind of keeps authenticity and creativity intact.
But yeah, Sam, you just mentioned the science fiction part of this, right? Fast forward the clock, maybe not all that far down the road, and we're in weird science territory.
Right.
Right. You give this to the genetic people who can clone sheep, and now you're cloning and creating the perfect boyfriend or girlfriend. It's the future is, you just open up the imagination to everything that this could apply to. And it's
all getting a weird. Bit Black Mirror. I don't know if anyone's seen that show, but it's starting to feel like that.
But let's bring it back to IT, right? So I looked at this from two angles. One is, just like any other automation that you bring into technology, it can be good or it can be bad. And I think we've all made the point that this is not an easy button. If you generate in IT, you're not generating an article or content. You're generating a script that can go apply a patch to 300 servers, or generate a PowerShell script that can deploy this piece of software. Whatever that automation that you're asking the AI to generate, you can't assume that it's going to do everything that you need it to do without any QA, without any testing. I would argue you need even more testing on something that is AI generated versus human generated. You could look at it as, this is the way to get rid of human error, but there is going to be now AI error that humans need to cross-check. So it gets, it brings in another level of complexity, even though it may ease the burden. Think about that poem that we started with. If you generate now a PowerShell script that you would have taken weeks to generate, then you can do it in 10 minutes. Now you can spend your time QAing and testing and becoming more efficient. But it's not an easy button. The other angle I looked at it from was the actual content itself. And we started to talk about it a little bit. I think we as a society need to contemplate how we would respond or negate the intentional bad actors, right? We're talking about using this for good. We're already, I would argue, in a place where someone could use this to generate something that takes a negative or a bad action, and we've got to figure out how to manage that.
Mm. I mean, the sort of theme of checks and balances, I feel, was something that in the chat, in the RB chat, caught Oriana's and Megan's attention a little bit. I don't know if either of you have any takes or perspectives on how society or how employers should anticipate these kind of issues or challenges.
Yeah, I think there's sort of three components that I think about when it comes to this stuff, one of which is intellectual property. And I think that one of the wonderful things about technology and IT and code in particular is that there is already a big culture of borrowing and sharing, and that's very much the norm. So I think in some ways that's less of a concern when it comes to writing new code, because all code is remixed code as it is. The second one is intentional bad actors, and I think this is super important in every single application of AI. The whole topic of AI bias could take 1,000 books and podcasts, and does. And I think it's really important from a security standpoint, right? And I think that's one of the places where also, again, we're talking about a huge need for expertise and how to anticipate that and evaluate that. This is why we have white hats and black hats, right? Like, we need people to see, okay, how can you break this? And how can you break a lot of stuff with this, so that we don't do that? And then I think the third part is this sort of race to the bottom that I think is a huge risk, where companies want to cut costs to the point where they undermine the structures they need to succeed in the long term, right? You can cut costs in the short term and build a really bad system for yourself and for an industry as a whole in the long term, if, for example, you're not willing to invest in training people up. And I think that's one of the things that we are seeing in IT, a lot in security as well, right? Is that it can be really hard to find people who have the knowledge you need, because there are so many people who want to go into this field, and there's not a lot of opportunities to really help them grow and get that mentorship and get that experience to be able to do that high level work.
Yeah, I would like to add one thing. AIs are learning from what we do and what we share online. That's a very, very important aspect if we want to minimize a little bit the bad backlash that we can get from AIs. So if people are starting to share more authentic information with more authentic feelings, etc., it's going to learn better. So right now, AI is still, with all of the fascinated stuff that we have discussed in this episode, in the early stages, and it will keep on evolving. But we need to be careful with what we are feeding the AI. So we need to be kinder. We need to have a nicer behavior towards each other. We need to spread really the essence of being human beings. And I think I would like to be on the positive side of it. If we believe that we can do this as smaller groups and then bigger groups, the AI will evolve into becoming a nice tool or a nice helping hand that will help us to get better and get ahead of what we are trying to create in the digital world.
Love it. We can all go away from this show and be a bit nicer online to feed AI with better content.
Better, I love that.
Material to emulate. Let's try. No, this is great. I mean, Sam, I know you've covered this around the topic a few times very interestingly on the Dex Hub. I wonder if there's anything we've left out that you'd want to just pick up on here for a final word.
No, I just think that kind of the through line for across a lot of the content that we've written, whether it's about the impact of automation or AI like this, there can just there's naturally a lot of anxiety and fear around the replacement conversation. Will these tools replace human workers? And I think that what we're seeing, the more we kind of do research into these tools and write about them and discuss them, is that I don't necessarily think that people need to live in fear of being, you know, replaced by AI and automation, but I think that kind of everyone, no matter what field you work in today, has kind of a responsibility to really understand these technologies as well as they possibly can and understand that they are going to change the way we work. I don't think necessarily they're going to replace us or anything that gets too sci-fi to worry about. But I think that the more you can really understand these tools and maybe understand the impact that they will have on your day-to-day work in the future, the more you can understand what's missing from them and where the human effort can't be replicated. So I think that, you know, it's really a time of people educating themselves as much as possible on these tools, and that can only benefit us moving forward.
A time of adaptation for sure. And I'm just going to add a sort of personal note that so my eldest son is 7, and he's been coming home now for a couple of years with spellings to learn, right? Like I certainly did when I was a sort of 7-year-old English schoolboy. I had to learn, you know, 10, 12, whatever spellings every week. And I was kind of a bit dyslexic and a bit useless at it. I'd muddle all the letters up, and then my handwriting was really bad. So this was like a real point of misery to me every single week, was learning these darn spellings. And now seeing my son, who has the same sort of dyslexia and kind of slightly cack-handed handwriting, go through the same suffering with pretty much the same words, you know, decades later, can be a little frustrating. It's frustrating when you think, well, he's going to spend most of his time when he is writing with spell check on a phone, using his fingertips rather than a pen, you know, using a screen. Now the prospect that, you know, all writing is going to be done feasibly in the coming decades by the time he's of age by just giving some generalized instructions to an application, it makes it feel even sillier, or it highlights the need to actually adapt our education processes a little bit to keep up with the times, doesn't it? That's my only end point. Bit of a sore point from my own childhood for you all there. But anyway, listen, fascinating chat. And thanks so much to Sam and Megan for digging around in this terrifying tool and finding those very, very amusing and fun examples. I think the poem, we will make it available online for everybody or the listeners who do want to revisit that, maybe consign it to memory. And, you know, do check out the Dex Show, Dex Hub mothership that Sam edits so adroitly. It's so worth a read, and there's a lot of material, as we mentioned, that kind of circle this topic and other fascinating things too. Find links to it in the show notes as ever. Listen, everybody, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you at the next Reality Bites.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
To make sure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure to leave a rating of the show. Just tap the number of stars you think the podcast deserves. If you'd like to learn more about how NextThink can help you improve your digital employee experience, head over to nextthink.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.